Hello, welcome to Bare Naked Politics, the podcast for people who don't really live and breathe politics, but still want to know what's going on. You know, you still want somebody to strip it all back and make sense of it without making assumptions that you're already some kind of expert. So that's what this podcast is, and that's what I'm here for. I'm Julia Bell, and I'm going to get you squared away today on this upcoming election on the 6th of May. There's a lot happening at the same time. It's not just local elections, although that is what I'll talk about a lot today. There's six different things going on at once because the UK is berserk and very rarely does anything we do make any sense. So we have obviously the local elections, but that's in England only. And that's where we'll be voting for councillors to sit on our local councils and make decisions about our immediate area. We'll have the Scottish parliamentary election, aka the Holyrood election, which is where Scottish folks will be voting for their MSPs, members of the Scottish Parliament. And this may well be a massive moment in history because Nicola Sturgeon, the First Minister of Scotland and the leader of the SNP, has said time and time again, loud and clear, what we want is an independent Scotland. And the way we do that is we get an independence referendum. I know we had one in 2014, we voted no, but it's time to do it again. Times have changed and we reckon that we can get what we want this time. So if Scotland votes in the SNP with a massive majority, that to her will be a sure sign from the Scottish public that they're on the same page as her. And that will be her cue to march down to Westminster and demand that independence ref 2.0 happens. So really, this Scottish parliamentary election on the 6th of May could be the kind of big catalyst to Scotland leaving the UK, which is, it makes me emotional actually thinking about that. But my opinion is absolutely irrelevant, but that is very important if you're a Scottish listener. So that's two of the things that are happening. I told you it's going to be a big day. We also have the Welsh elections, so for the Welsh Parliament, aka the Senedd, and again for Wales, it's going to be a big day, not for the same reason, not because Welsh independence is particularly on the cards. It's a conversation, but I don't think it's a genuinely imminent possibility like it is in Scotland. But remember, the devolved parliaments in Scotland, Wales and Northern Ireland have been more relevant this year throughout this pandemic than maybe ever before, actually, because they have dictated individually how their nations should respond to this pandemic for the most part. So they've set COVID restrictions. They've like limited how and why and where people can travel. They've set when the schools should be opened or closed. They make laws on taxes. So Welsh voters, if they're sensible, are going to be looking at this and taking it very seriously, because whoever comes out on top in Welsh Parliament will lead them through the rest of this pandemic and the recovery afterwards. So deciding who sits there is massive. Then we have police and crime commissioners elections. This is all happening on the same day, and barely anyone that I've spoken to even knew that this bit was happening. This is the one that people go, the what? But in England and Wales, 39 police and crime commissioners are up for election. And it's a big role because the people who win those are the ones who set the budgets and plan the agendas for the police. I said that really weirdly. In that area. I mean, the police as a body of people are more politicised now than I can remember in my lifetime. So I think that this might be a particularly kind of testy area that comes up on the 6th of May. But yeah, 39 people are up for those roles. I remember when I was talking about the election in America in November, and I was talking about how it works out there, where when you vote, like it just happened, when people voted for, you know, Biden or Trump, on their ballot card, they had a shopping list of other options as well. So they were voting for their president, but they were also voting for who they wanted senators to be, representatives, and community figures, authority figures like heads of police. And UK listeners were reaching out saying, that's weird. That's a weird system. And I was replying saying, but we have a very similar system. We vote on a lot more people than I think a lot of people realise. You've got lots of layers to your democracy in the UK. And you get to choose not just who sits in Parliament in Westminster, but who sits on your local council and who sits at the top of the food chain in the police. And that's just a few, because there's other layers as well. So, for example, again, on the 6th of May, we have the London Assembly election. obviously this is only relevant if you live in London, but the London Assembly is like a mini parliament who hold the mayor to account. And the mayor acts like a kind of mini governor just in London. So as you probably know, Sadiq Khan currently holds that spot and he's the mayor of London as it is. And the London Assembly will have been checking what he's been up to, approving or rejecting how he wants to spend his budget, his massive multi-billion pound budget, I should say. They've quizzed him on his policies. They've acted just as kind of Parliament do on a larger scale. And that's 25 members of the London Assembly who are up for re-election on, you guessed it, the 6th of May. And then finally, speaking of mayors, we've got mayoral elections as well. 13 mayoral elections happening up and down the country, including the London mayor, Sadiq Khan. So he has to hold on to his spot. And these are big roles because these are directly elected mayors, not the Lord Mayor you think of who, you know, operates in a little town and wears the big gold chain on their suit jacket. Not the same thing. This is much bigger than that. So think Sadiq Khan in London, Andy Burnham in Manchester, Dan Jarvis in Sheffield, big political characters, much more powerful than even MPs, who have these massive budgets to transform their areas. And so if you live in an area with a directly elected mayor, you would be, in my opinion, a bit nuts not to at least read up on what's happening, if not vote. So we'll get onto that as well. Now, I've been lucky enough in this episode to be joined by two guests. We've got Martin Lennon, Labour councillor in South Lanarkshire in Scotland. He just chatted to me about what his job actually entails and when you vote for a councillor, what you're actually voting for. And I also chatted to Matthew Robinson, Conservative councillor and candidate for mayor of West Yorkshire, which is actually a brand new position. But as I've said, it's massive, and should he win, then Matthew's life is going to completely transform because that is a big responsibility. So I got to hear directly from the horse's mouth about how he's feeling about that, but also what that job will involve should he win. So a nice balanced episode that. Look, I've got a Labour and a Tory. So I'm like a slightly more potty-mouthed, rosé-fueled equivalent of the BBC. That's what I need to put on my business cards. Listen, what I haven't mentioned yet is at the end of this episode, I'll be announcing the winner of the giveaway that I put together with the bunch of absolute legends at Gearbox Records, independent record label based here in the heart of London. They focus primarily on vinyl and they have this amazing collection of artists on their books. And they have clubbed together with me and we've put together £1,000 worth of goodies, including a Gearbox automatic Mark II turntable. If you follow me on Instagram, you'll have seen it in all its glory. It's see-through, completely see-through, or bare naked, if you will. It's worth £550 on its own. And that, as well as a set of AirPods and a Polaroid camera and all the rest of it, are going to one of you. So listen out for that. The winner will be announced in this episode. Make sure you hit subscribe to the podcast if you haven't already. And let's get you prepped for this kind of tornado of political events happening on the 6th of May 2021. Okay, so a lot going on. Today we're focusing on the local election and then later mayoral elections. And for some reason, I just feel like local elections in Britain have a bit of a reputation for being boring, to be honest, or not interesting, which is the same thing, I suppose, or not important. And I know a lot of my mates who are usually really politically engaged have voiced to me that this topic just doesn't really inspire them. And listen, I'm not judging you if you feel the same way and if you weren't like the most enthused you've ever been to listen to an episode of this when you saw what this was about. However, by the end of this episode, I'm pretty intent on making you change your mind because, and I might be talking out my arse here, but often I've found the reason that people find things boring is because they've just never really bothered to understand them. Not because the topic itself is dull. And as soon as you sort of take the time to get your head around it, you realise how much there is to it and how interesting it is. Maybe I'm wrong, but let me just tell you a bit about these local elections, just in case you've got some holes in your knowledge, and I suspect it might all start getting a bit more interesting. So, there's going to be a vote happening in 143 local council authorities across England. And within that, there's a lot of people in the game, with skin in the game. So according to the BBC, 4,650 council seats, or thereabouts, will be up for grabs. Which is 4,650 people are going to win council seats. That's not mentioning all the people who are running. Because you're going to have people from different parties gunning for the same spots. So if you are listening from England somewhere, even if you are completely unaware of it, there is a buzz happening and there are rivalries happening and there's kind of competing agendas on the table just in your little patch, wherever you are. Which I don't know what it is. I think there's something quite sweet about that, that there's all this political activity happening and a lot of us just don't even care. Now, you might not think that's sweet. You might think it's annoying. You might think, oh God, you know, this year has been political overload already. I don't want to think about yet more candidates arguing about yet more issues. But I think it's worthwhile at least understanding what those people do and what the role that they're all gunning for actually entails. So for that, I caught up with friend of the podcast, Martin Lennon, who's a Labour councillor for Rutherglen Central and North, which is a ward in South Lanarkshire in Scotland. Hello.
Hiya, how are we?
I'm good, how are you?
Not too bad.
You're an official regular.
Eventually I'm going to need like a co-starring credit.
All right, don't get cocky. What is a day in the life of a councillor? What does your role entail?
So being a councillor is very varied. It's actually a brilliant role. I particularly like it because it's a great mix of all the upsides of being involved in formal politics, where you've got a position and you can campaign on issues that you care about, and you can make a real difference in terms of the formal decisions that are being made about the area that you live in, but don't have all the same kind of flack that you get from being like a member of the Scottish Parliament or a member of Parliament or a kind of more high profile role like that. And that is kind of like by intent as well. Councillors in the UK, almost without exception, are part-time. It's supposed to be a part-time role. So in addition to my role as a councillor, I also have a full-time job. I work for an education charity. Yeah, day-to-day, it can be a huge variation. There's the formal side of being a councillor, which means I represent the area I live in on various committees. You know, the planning committee, we've got quite a lot to say about how different bits of land can be used and for what purpose, because obviously you don't want a dump being built in the middle of a council housing estate.
Right.
Which was a proposal that was actually made in my area about 2 years
joking.
Ago.
That was a real thing. Oh my God.
So it's the planning committee where you can object to really inappropriate uses of land like that. There's also the licensing committee, there's another one that I'm on. And a big part of that is like certain professions, certain trades have a particular onus or like a particular position of responsibility. Mm-hmm. And so they're regulated by a local council. So taxi drivers all need to be licensed by the local authority. And so we've got a role in ensuring that only fit and proper people have taxi licenses, but also, you know, decisions about how late pubs can open in particular areas, whether it's a suitable location for a nightclub, whether it's a suitable location for an off licence, window cleaners, really weirdly. I think that's partly because some people who were maybe earning a living illegally were claiming that they were window cleaners because there's no paper trail associated with it, and so you need a licence to actually be a window cleaner. But you're on local schools, you're on health and social care, you make decisions about that. Yeah, it's like it's really, really varied. The stereotype's always kind of dog shit in bins.
Yeah, that's what I think of. It's just because I think a lot of your work is a bit unnoticed. Like you had to tell me about the window cleaner thing. I just didn't even think about that.
Very often it's what councillors do is only noticed when it goes wrong. And people, you know, if a council's doing its job well, a lot of people don't think that they're doing anything at all. No one ever says, oh God, my bins were really effectively collected for the last 10 years. If a collection's missed, people know, you know, like...
Yeah. Just so that everyone's completely clear then, if you had to summarise precisely what the difference is between what you do and what an MP does, what's the difference?
Right, so MPs talk about things that people are interested in, but very often don't have a huge impact on your life. And councillors deal with things that no one is interested in a lot of the time, but actually has a huge impact on your life.
Specifically, for example?
Specifically, for it. So if you have an issue with your school, that is the council. It's the council that runs the school. It's the council that employs the head teacher that runs the school. If you have an issue with the potholes on your road, almost without a doubt, it's the council that is responsible for actually assigning a team to go out and repair those potholes. If you have an issue with the nick of your local park, what's the council that decided how often that park was going to be cleaned, how often the bins were going to be emptied, how often it was going to be pre-sold? If you have an issue where you can't afford a house in the private rented market, and you can't afford to save up for a deposit so you can buy somewhere, the council is responsible for providing social housing. It is. So all of these like very real day-to-day things, all of the actual interactions you have with government, almost always is with local government.
Do you think then that a lot of people, when they're angry about something that's happening in their area, will perhaps wrongly go and complain to their MP when really they ought to be like tweeting at you?
Yes. So I used to work for a local MP and also used to work for a local MSP. And in both cases, a huge chunk of the things that people got in touch with their MP about, we passed on to the relevant councillor that represented the area that person lived in.
Okay. Why are councillors attached to parties? How much does, in your case, the Labour Party actually affect or dictate what you do day to day?
It's difficult to say how attached local elected members are to the political parties. I think it's good that councillors are party political and that are elected as part of parties, because I think the alternative to doing that would be everyone standing as an independent, which effectively would mean that only the very wealthy would be able to effectively run a local election campaign.
Yeah, people with powerful friends or money to print all the flyers themselves and hold events would be the only ones able to do it.
Yeah, I mean, effectively, okay. if we didn't have party political local councillors, there would actually be maybe two or three parties. They would be unofficial, but largely speaking, there would be the Property Developer Party, which if you were in the business of building houses and developing land, a huge obstacle or a huge regulatory barrier that you've got is the planning system, and that is made up of local councillors. And so making sure that people who agree with you on how land should be used would be really effective. And there'd be, you know, the pub party of people who were just like, again, because the licensing committee has a huge impact on like the licensed trade. And so that would be it. In terms of day to day, I don't get orders from Keir Starmer. I don't get an email saying this is what your opinion is on the particular issues that are coming up on the housing committee this week.
Okay. But I don't understand what the benefit is. I get now what the benefit is for the councillors, because it's like, oh, I'll run under the banner of Labour or the Tories or the SNP, and then they'll fund my campaign as long as I align loosely with their values. What's the benefit for the party? What are they gaining from giving you, you know, this platform? And actually, once you've got that role, you could, in theory, do whatever you wanted.
You can, right? Yeah, so you can do whatever you want, in theory, and sometimes not in theory. Political parties, yeah, they'll contribute a decent amount of money towards your local campaign. But the big thing really is that they will, if you're a Labour endorsed candidate, most people do not know who their councillors are. And almost everyone does not know who the candidates for local election are.
No.
People don't vote for individuals, even for MP or MSP or anything like that. They vote by and large for political parties. And so like, they have an understanding of the broad attitude and the broad set of values associated with a political party. And if you have that party's endorsement and you are that party's representative, like most of the time, that's what people are making their decision based on. And I think that's healthy.
So it's actually quite a similar role, but on a smaller scale to an MP.
It's very, very similar, apart from it's part-time, it's on a much more local basis, and you're responsible for different things. But yeah, you can roughly think of it as a parliament for your city, or a parliament for your county, or a parliament for your town. That really is how it operates in a lot of ways.
What would you say to someone who hadn't registered to vote yet, not necessarily in your ward, anywhere in the country, they're not sure they're going to vote at all on the 6th of May. They didn't really understand what the point of it was. How would you perhaps persuade them to actually get out and vote?
Right, so I wouldn't persuade someone to go out and vote, right? I mean, you should absolutely vote, but don't just vote. Meet your counsellor, phone them up, email them, attend their surgery. If there's a party that you think aligns with your interests and aligns with your view of the world, whatever it is, particularly if it's the Labour Party, get involved, volunteer, especially like in the run-up to the election, maybe deliver a couple of leaflets, get to know the candidates, meet them, help them out, see what you can do, and think about standing to be a councillor yourself. And I seriously mean that, because there's a certain mystique around being an elected official that I don't think is really justified. I think it's a job that a lot of people can do. A lot of people would be great councillors and could make a really big contribution, but they're worried about it, and they're worried about looking silly, and they think that there's some other group of people out there that are the real politicians and that are the real people that should be making these decisions, and it's not true. They're ordinary people, and you would make a great job at it. If you care, that's really the prime qualification.
And it's all right money, you said. The money's all right.
It's not, I wouldn't say it's all right. It's not a way to make easy money. It's £17,000 a year, which is like good money if you
if
can
it's
combine
on
it
top
with
of
another
your,
job.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like great, and it's I feel really privileged, and I've got a day job that I can fit around it. But it's a brilliant way to fall out with your boss, becoming a counsellor, and saying you need Wednesday off next week and Tuesday off 2 weeks after that, then two Mondays in a row, and then a Thursday afternoon, and then Friday morning, and then some emergency meetings. So it's a labour of love, but I would have to love it to do it. You work harder, you get paid less, and you're more stressed than any of my non-political pals.
And people's knee-jerk response to you is hatred. I
tell you what, you develop a thick skin. Not infrequently you get emails from people saying, like, I got a message from somebody who was like raging about the war in Iraq to me, and I was like, look, I agree with you, mate. I think the war in Iraq was an absolute disgrace. And he was like, well, you Labour politicians are all the same. And I was like, I was 12 years old when Britain invaded Iraq, and I was against it then, and I still am.
Thank you so much for taking the time again. You're a friend of the podcast now.
That's quite right. Listen, good luck. All the best.
That was Martin Lennon there, a Labour councillor in South Lanarkshire, Scotland. And Scotland aren't having their local elections until next year, 2022. So he's safe come the 6th of May. He'll be enjoying the sport of watching everyone else squirm. But it was nice of him to take the time to get us squared away on what that job involves. Now, I want to move to the big ticket item, in my opinion, which is talking about these mayoral elections, which if you live in an area that has one, I don't want to tell you how to feel, but you really ought to be engaged with it, because the outcome of it will, I'm telling you, directly and profoundly affect your life, and you will, intentionally or not, hear about the person who wins. Maybe more than you'd like to, because a city mayor or a metropolitan area mayor is this big personality that sits at the top of the kind of political totem pole in your area, and they have a much bigger presence and a much bigger effect than your MP. Because if you think about it, your MP, they go down to Westminster, they represent you there, and the hope is, this is the hope, that they're going to represent your interests when it comes to national votes on things. They're kind of straddling two places at once. They're having a presence in their constituency, but most of the work they do, let's be honest, is centred around Westminster and voting on national laws and reading bills that the government or various committees are putting forward. We don't really see a lot of what that is. We don't see a lot of what they get up to. And that's not even mentioning party politics and all the drama that they're probably trying to deal with that. So say, for instance, your MP, maybe they know in their heart of hearts that a bill that they're voting on today would just suck for you and your area. But what if their party whip turns around to them and says, you are voting for this bill because that's what the party's doing, and you better toe the line with the rest of us or we'll freeze you out? I mean, that's probably a nice version of what some of the party whips are saying to the like low-level MPs. And to be honest, I'm still not even mentioning that MP's own kind of personal political career aspirations. They might have their eyes on certain committees that they want to be a part of. They might be hankering after a role in the cabinet or the shadow cabinet. So if you piss your party off, you've got no chance. You've scuppered that. So they're balancing a lot. I'm sure if you asked your MP what are your priorities, they would always turn around and say, you and my constituents, and I'm always thinking about you at the top of my priority list. But it's not always that straightforward. And sometimes there's intense conflicts of interest and they're kind of having to vote, balancing a lot of things. Mayors, on the other hand, are not MPs. They do not vote in Parliament. They don't technically have any real obligations towards the Westminster government. They're not that connected. They are connected to parties, often. So Andy Burnham in Manchester is a Labour mayor, and I think that's been pretty obvious, as he has been particularly confrontational towards Boris Johnson and his Conservative government, especially when we had, do you remember when we had in the UK different tiers of lockdown and different areas were put into different restrictions? Andy Burnham was saying, you aren't doing enough to financially support my people, the people of Greater Manchester. You're insisting that we enter harsher tiers of lockdown than other parts of the country, and it's going to cripple our economy. You need to do more.
So we've been clear throughout. We could only accept further restrictions with full financial support. So this would cost £90 million to the end of the financial year. In negotiations with the government, we were prepared to reduce our request to £75 million. But the government refused to accept this. And at 2 o'clock today, they walked away from negotiations. I mean, it's brutal, to be honest, isn't it? This is no way to run the country in a national crisis. It isn't. This is not right. They should not be doing this, grinding people down, trying to accept the least that they can get away with. £22 million to fight the situation that we are in is frankly disgraceful.
So that was Andy Burnham, Mayor of Greater Manchester there back in October 2020. And so elected mayors can often be seen as kind of key challengers of central government. You know, they've got your back in your region. They're not involved in national policies or international policies. That's way above what they focus on. They're just looking at you. Another interesting example, actually, before I move on, of a city mayor's role sort of clashing with central government was in Bristol. I feel like not enough people talk about the Bristol mayor. So their elected mayor is called Marvin Rees, and he took issue with the government's response to, do you remember when the Black Lives Matter protesters ripped down that statue of the infamous slave trader Edward Colston in Bristol, and they threw it in that river? Well, Marvin Rees took issue with the government's stance on that. Listen to what he said.
Well, I can't condone criminal damage. And I've been warning, raising concerns over the last few weeks in general, but certainly over the last week and a half or so, about the dangers of mass gatherings in the middle of a COVID pandemic when we are yet to have a vaccine. There's very real dangers. But at the same time, as I've shared, I'm the descendant of, Jamaicans who at some point were enslaved. And I can't say that that statue was anything other than offensive to me in the middle of the city. I've heard some messages come out about national government. This is just about mindless vandalism. I mean, you can bury your head in the sand and say that, but you wouldn't get any more than a D on your A-level paper for saying that. There is more. You may not like what happened, and it may be distasteful for you, but you have to understand it. We cannot afford politicians that refuse to understand the populations that they've been tasked with leading. Otherwise you end up with a Trumpian approach, which is all about dominating and militarizing your streets. You have to engage.
So Bristol Mayor Marvin Rees there in June 2020, he's a Labour elected mayor, just like Andy Burnham, and he kind of had the freedom to take a nuanced approach and say, look, I don't agree with vandalism, but I don't miss Edward Colston's statue, and I take issue with the government for this, this, and this. So he kind of was able to be free to stand on his own two feet. He's not tied to anything, if that makes sense. So they're these big personalities. What they say has a lot of sway, and we've got 13 of them that are up for election in May. Did that rhyme? That rhymed! The shittest poem of all time, Julia's mayoral poem. But this is the thing, when people say that these elections aren't important in spring, I can't deal with it because it is just wrong, especially when it comes to mayoral elections. These people are like governors for entire regions of the country. Now, I want to play you back the conversation I had with one of the candidates gunning for the gig. That's Matthew Robinson, the Conservative candidate for Mayor of West Yorkshire. He, of course, would take a different approach to Marvin Rees and Andy Burnham, since he is from the same party as the Prime Minister. So you will actually hear him talk a bit about that. But best of all, he kind of just took the time to help fill me in on what the role will actually entail, should he win.
Hiya.
Hello. How are you?
I'm all right. How are you?
Good. Thank you for doing this with me. Can I be honest, Matt? I didn't know we had a directly elected mayor in West Yorkshire. I was born and raised literally down the road from you. News to me. Am I right in thinking that position is vacant at this time?
So we didn't have one before. This will be the first mayor that we've had. The first time people are voting across West Yorkshire to have a directly elected mayor in the same way that they do in Tees Valley, in the West Midlands, in Greater Manchester and others other areas. So this is the first time. So I think because it's new, that's some interest from people. I think because it's new, the scepticism from people.
Yeah.
And because it's new, people are trying to work out just what it all means. Because they kind of know what their MP does and they kind of know what their councillor does. But this is a new role. So I think they're trying to work out just what it means, how it will affect their lives ultimately as well.
Yeah. So for anyone who is listening who isn't sure, what would your powers and responsibilities include should you win the position of directly elected mayor of West Yorkshire?
Yes, so there's the powers include skills and adult education comes into the powers. There's lots of powers around transport and transport system. So that's not just connectivity with other regions, that's connectivity in the region. So lots of conversations going on about mass transit here in West Yorkshire. We've got conversations about policing as well, because the Police and Crime Commissioner role will cease to exist in West Yorkshire. It will be merged with the mayoralty, so the mayor will have responsibility over policing as well.
Wow.
So and then there's a lot around regeneration schemes, you know, investment, homes as well, that are all merged in to the role, and conversations that are ongoing, not just about existing powers but what might come forward in the future too. So it's massive. So when you say to people that West Yorkshire, the mayor of West Yorkshire, will be in charge of £1 billion budget, I mean it. That's the sort of figures we're talking about. It's a serious job, it's serious money, and you want somebody who's going to take the job seriously too.
But you're bleeding as well into the world of personality politics. I think one of the key differences that you didn't mention there was, on a local level, who, honestly, no offence, can like name all the candidates running for their local council. Even people who can name their local councillor, I'm impressed by. Right? That means that they're ingrained in the system. However, most people can, if they have an elected mayor, can name them. And I do think that personality plays a massive role. How are you feeling about that? Have you had to sort of brand yourself?
I've not changed anything to rebrand. So I am who I am. And I've always said that. You know, I'm pretty straight talking, I'm hardworking, I'm from the area, I live in the area, and I know my patch. But yeah, you know, it is surreal when you see yourself on the national BBC page and a news page and things like that, and the stories covered elsewhere. But in a sense, it doesn't overwhelm me. It means that people are taking notice and people care, and actually the job matters. And that's why I want to do it, because it matters. It matters who gets the job. It matters who can deliver. And it matters who's going to stand up for West Yorkshire.
I remember a little while ago there were referendums across various cities in the UK. Do you want a directly elected mayor or not? And most of the places said no thanks.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
the
yeah.
reason that people gave, quite comically I thought, was I just can't cope with any more politicians. I think we need less rather than more. What would you say to that?
I think it's understanding the roles and the powers and what's there. So there have been many people who've said to me, oh, what's the point? What are you having a bloody mayor for? You know, and stuff like that. And I get that. I really do. I get that. Because it's new. And I think actually, if you start to speak to people in Tees Valley or the West Midlands, they understand what a mayor's delivered. So because it's new, there is that challenge. Actually, whoever's elected needs to go on a real campaign to make sure that they are selling the mayoralty and what can be done and showing it's something that delivers. In a sense, you are constantly having to justify your role and why you do it. And I think sometimes that's the failing of politics and politicians, is that people get elected and they say, oh, well, we only ever see you at election time. Well, actually, it shouldn't be that way. They should be sick of the bloody sight of you, actually, by election time, because you've been doing everything for 3 or 4 years before then and justifying why you should be re-elected.
Are you terrified? Because obviously it would be very exciting for you to get elected, but surely then it would weigh down, oh my God, a lot, not just people in West Yorkshire, a lot of people in the country are going to know who I am. And I'm going to represent this entire region on a bigger scale than even the MPs in this region. Everyone knows who Andy Burnham is, right? And he kind of kicked up a fuss to represent Mancunians and residents of Greater Manchester throughout the pandemic. And people in, you know, Cornwall were talking about him.
Yeah,
that might be you. I know that you're a Conservative politician, so you're in line more so with what the government are doing. But I would be frightened.
I don't think frightened's the word. I think that there's some nerves because you care and because you want to do things right. We've got 7 candidates as well in this election, so there's going to be a lot of debate that's taking place, and there already is about that and what the priorities are. So for me, I think there's more to do, but nerves, you know, not entering into it. Maybe when we the live TV hustings, there might be a moment just before we go on where there's some of the nerves that jump in. But I'm more excitement than nerve.
Okay, you read a lot about how local elections are just opinion polls for how the national government are doing, and how a regular pattern is that people will vote for opposition councillors and mayors and whatever because they're cross with the government, and this is their way of showing that. And sort of one typical pattern is that the Liberal Democrats seem to clean up in local elections because they're the sort of key alternative that people see. What do you say to that? Does that kind of concern you as a Conservative candidate, because you might be judged on people's preconceptions of your party rather than you as a person and what you bring to the table?
I think local elections, you know, it's interesting. Somebody referred to local elections as a bit like replicating the midterm elections in America, where it's a barometer of the presidency and what the presidency is doing. I don't think of it that way, partly because we have more parties. We have a more nuanced system. It's not so much of a straight choice. You mentioned the Liberal Democrats before. Obviously, we've got Liberal Democrats running councils somewhere, Labour running councils, Conservatives running councils. So it is a real mix that's in there. And that's before you factor in independents. And we have a huge amount of independent councillors in areas as well. I actually think it's just much more nuanced. It matters who's been incumbent in their area and who's done work for them. Regularly you will find that people will say, well, I don't like X party, but my local councillor is from that party, and do you know what, they do a good job, so I'm going to vote for them.
If that's the case, then why are mayors attached to parties at all? How much does, in your case, the Conservative Party actually affect or dictate your campaign, what you stand for, and what you would do in office should you win?
I think there's an element of, you go through the selection process to have the nomination or to have the endorsement of your party as you go through this. So, and you would be on the approved list. They've signed you off, I suppose, as a candidate to say that you are suitable to stand for office and that they've gone through all those checks. In another sense, actually, the nature of the mayoralty and the way the powers work means that a party in central government or run from another part of the country just can't control every inch of this. No. So in a sense, there's a lot of things that are beyond the party's control or mechanisms. You can't have policies for everything that are there from the party in central. So there are a lot more areas where actually you can do more things and you can be a bit bolder, or you can try things in a different way, in a different direction. And I think that's the benefit of the mayoralty, actually, too. I am standing as a Conservative, but I am standing to be the mayor of West Yorkshire, not the Conservative mayor of West Yorkshire. So I'm very clear on making that nuance. Yes, I am a Conservative and I'm on the Conservative ticket, but once in, I'm there to do the best for West Yorkshire.
Even if that means clashing with the Tories in Westminster now and again?
It would there naturally be, you know, disagreements, I think, that happen at times and on how things go about and what we, you know, what's done. I want a constructive relationship with central government and with RMPs. And I think that, you know, this idea of petty party politics, you know, and looking for the latest TV camera to jump in front of to have a pop at the government, I don't think that helps actually the debate and the discussion.
Who does that?
I could not possibly comment. but some people who are listening will know who does that. You know, look for the nearest camera to jump in front of. And actually, there's better ways to do things, I think.
Okay. Can you, just for anyone who's still a bit confused about the structure of things and what each mayor does, what is the difference between a directly elected mayor such as Sadiq Khan of London, Andy Burnham of Manchester, potentially yourself, should you win this upcoming election in West Yorkshire, and the likes of the town mayors you see with the huge gold chains sitting over their suits, cutting ribbons in front of local nurseries? What is the difference between those two roles?
I get asked this question a lot. So a lot of people will say, oh, we've got a mayor in our town, and why do we need a mayor for West Yorkshire? Well, your town mayor is somebody who's usually called a Lord Mayor, but sometimes she's shortened to a mayor, and they are there to do ceremonial roles. Their role is very much a figurehead and a civic role in the area. You're a directly elected mayor actually has powers and budget to do things and to help make decisions and drive things forward in the region and ultimately to deliver. So whether that is on policing, on transport, on skills training, on regeneration projects, that's what the mayor for the region will do, and that directly elected mayor. So in a sense that while the names sound similar, the roles could not be further apart.
Are you like a mini president?
I don't know if I term it as a mini president. I think it reminds me a little bit when you see the sort of governor models that are in the states, in the states, but maybe less powers that are there. And I say governors because the size of the regions can be quite large. So, you know, if you look at West Yorkshire, you know, about 2.4 million people. So, you know, that's very big.
Okay. You said the budget's big, it's a big responsibility. Is elected mayor of West Yorkshire a well-paid job?
It's £105,000, is the salary of it, yeah. So it's...
It's higher than an MP.
It's higher than an MP, yeah. I suppose, like you said before, there's you're representing more people and you have more of a budget than MPs do, and most MPs will not have a budget to spend in this way. And be accountable for that budget. So yes, it's higher. I think that you're going to have to bloody deliver though for that salary. Some people are going to want to see. They're going to want to see some bang for their buck, and rightly so.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time.
No problem at all. You look after yourself.
So that was Matthew Robinson, Tory candidate for Mayor of West Yorkshire, and just generally lovely human. Two lovely humans from two directly opposing parties. Look, even though I'm sure party politics will play quite a lot into your decision, most people, even people who admit to not being that informed, tend to have loyalty to somebody or something. I still think, though, when it comes to local elections, you should have a look at everyone. Have a look at all the people standing for roles in your area, because the votes that take place on the 6th of May do not affect Westminster politics at all. Boris Johnson isn't going anywhere until the general election, which will likely be in 2024, unless he stands down before then. Which actually there's been a pattern of lately, hasn't it? Both of his predecessors stood down before their time, David Cameron and Theresa May, both. But I keep saying it, you can be free on the 6th of May to vote based on exactly what you want and what you think would be best in your area. So yeah, check out what's happening. If you live in the likes of Bristol or Doncaster, Liverpool, Salford, Cambridgeshire, obviously London, West Yorkshire, as we now know, then you have got mayoral elections. You've got a directly elected mayor and you get to pick who you think it should be. So I just think it's a bit nuts not to bother registering to vote, especially if you live in those places. The Scottish and Welsh friends, of course, you've got big decisions as well. You've got to decide who you want to run your national devolved parliaments. And in Scotland, you know, if you vote SNP, that's you voting really for Scottish independence. Let's be honest, that's what it is, isn't it? Because you know what Nicola Sturgeon's agenda is. She's made that abundantly clear since very day one. So you could well be voting for Scotland to leave the UK, which is just absolutely huge. I already did a podcast on Scottish independence. The full thing is available on Patreon. So if you're unsure about the arguments for and against independence, that is going to be a really helpful resource for you. I spoke to three different people with three different outlooks, and I kind of outlined it all in detail. If you'd like me to do a podcast about Wales, by the way, I'll link that in the episode description, the Scottish one. But if you'd like me to do a podcast about Wales and Welsh politics, I'd be more than happy to. I just want to do whatever you want me to talk about. So get in touch with me at juliabell_x with requests for anything that you want me to talk about in future. And I tend to just go with what people want. So it's very interactive. Speaking of which, actually, I haven't answered any questions today. So I completely lied about how interactive it was. Let me get my phone. I might only have time for one before the end of the episode. So Victoria on Instagram asked, how best should we research the people we're voting for? Right, Victoria, the best thing to do is to first off work out what elections are actually happening in your area, because it's quite confusing. And literally every single person that is listening to this is going to have a different list of people that they can vote for. So best way to work that out, go on to Google and type in elections in my area, UK. And it should take you to the Electoral Commission website. That's where you want to be, is the Electoral Commission website, because that's like the database of all democratic activity happening in the UK. So elections in my area, UK, head to the Electoral Commission website, and then it tells you to type in your postcode. And when you've done that, it will then list whatever is happening in your area and what you're eligible to vote for, because it will span from local councils all the way up to whether you have a mayor or not. And then obviously if you're in Scotland or Wales, you've also got like members of the Scottish or Welsh Parliament to think about as well. So do that, work out actually who you can vote for. And then from there, my best advice is to read up on the candidates. So I think a fun way to do that is to go to their Twitter, because that is the least filtered version of them. It's the most personal insight into who they are, how they speak. There's probably going to be videos and pictures up there as well, so you can get a bit of a feel for them. And mayoral elections are quite personality driven, in my opinion, so you're going to want a feel for that. All right, that brings this episode to a close, and with that it is time to tell you finally who has won the most epic giveaway of all time. In collaboration with Gearbox Records, Daryl and I, we picked a winner this afternoon. We videoed the whole thing for just proof of fairness and to make sure that you're comfortable with everything. I will pop that on social media too, so you'll be able to match the audio to the video so you know that it's all legitimate. If you hear your name, congratulations. Get in touch with me on Instagram at juliabell_x. I will wait for you to reach out. And without further ado, this is what happened when we drew the name. Go for it. At Gav_and_his_self. Can you see that? Right. Gav, congratulations. You are the proud new owner of a Gearbox Automatic Mark II turntable, a set of Apple AirPods. What else is there? A Instax 11 Polaroid camera, £100 cash, 2 Gearbox vinyls. I know, it's ridiculous. And a year's subscription to Private Eye. Congratulations. Get in touch with me, because hopefully you can hear this on the podcast. And I can't wait to work out how to get those goodies to you. Cheers. Where's my Prosecco? Cheers, cheers, guys. So there we are. We have a winner. I can't wait to hear from you. And we can chat about how to get all this stuff to you. What a way for you to bring in a very exciting new chapter after what has to have been one of the worst years ever. Thank you so much to everyone who got involved. If you liked this episode of the podcast, make sure that you subscribe. If you want to support me and you want to keep the podcast going, you know what to do. Become a patron. The link is in the episode description, and there's loads of bonus content on there for you to enjoy. Happy election season. Let me know what your thoughts on things are. I always love hearing from you, and I'll speak to you in the next one. Okay, goodbye.